Good afternoon. We're now in open session. Welcome to the February 18th, 2025 regular board meeting. I call the meeting to order at 4 o'clock. Let's do roll call. Let's introduce or reinstate Dr. Mastin.
Mr. President, we've been notified that on January 17th, and there's a copy of the letter that was placed in your folder, that Dr. Mastin, who had resigned from the board last fall, has been reappointed to the Sussex County Vocational Technical School District Board for a term to expire on November 3rd, 2025, this coming November. So we've had some discussions about terms expiring. Appointment was made by then Governor Bethany Hall Long, and so Dr. Mastin is has been officially appointed to the board. He has his Sussex Tech email has been reinstated. He's been receiving all of the correspondence. We've been communicating with him as we communicate with all of you along the way, and he sends his apologies for not being able to join us this evening. He's rehabilitating, and we'll see him when we see him. But just wanted to note for the record that Dr. Mastin has been reappointed to the board.
Mr. Brittingham, don't we need a motion to come out of the executive session?
Need a motion to come out of executive session?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson. Seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
We're now in open session. Before we move on, we need to take a roll call. Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Ms. Wise.
Here.
Mr. Hayes.
Here.
Ms. Jones.
Here.
I'm here. Mr. Canoodle.
Here.
Dr. Mastin is absent. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Silence. Thank you. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the minutes for the regular and executive session, January 15th, 2025.
So moved. Second.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Mr. Johnson. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next, we move to the superintendent's report.
Thank you, sir. First of all, I want to say thank you to the board and to all of the staff who were flexible enough to move to Diane for getting things reposted, for moving of the school board meeting from tomorrow night to tonight. And if you've been following it along, following the bouncing ball at all today, you'll know that the numbers continue to fluctuate from nothing to, at one point, we were having a number with a 2 in front of it. On the side of precaution, and with the need to get some agenda items, to get our agenda approved, because we had postponed from last week, we requested that the meeting be relocated to tonight. Thank you for making that transition throughout the process, so. And to the staff for making the adjustments also. First on the superintendent's report is the update on the Sussex Tech High School building update by Richard Y. Johnson. We're joined by Dean Johnson and Brian Bassett this evening. Mr. Johnson, I believe the floor is yours.
Excellent.
How's everybody doing this evening? On my first day, we had a few change orders this month. The first one is a no-cost change. We're changing the sod from Bermudagrass to Kentucky Bluegrass. We did that because that's it looks better in the spring for Bermudagrass. It's kind of still coming out of its dormant season, so we want to make that change. The next two are from Hanover Steel. They're both credits. One is for the craft training fee. They had it in their price, and there is no craft training for miscellaneous metals. Second one is for removing stairs in the auditorium. That's tougher to say than I thought it would be. The next one is for Todd Devin food equipment. We made some equipment changes in the cafeteria, your kitchen. And the last one is one I said to bring back to you this month. This is our last VE, or second to last VE, for changing the mechanical fasteners, changing two mechanical fasteners on the roofing system instead of two layers of gluing it. It's a substantial savings, and it doesn't change the warranty, so we thought this would be good to put back in our pockets. We do have one more VE item for hopefully reducing some of the fire rated glass in the stairwells, and we'll bring that to you whenever we receive them. I think that's going to be kind of like an ongoing process of when they come through snow process and stuff, so that was going to be kind of ongoing. Any questions about the change orders?
Now we look credits.
Yeah. I was going to say,
we're too good.
I'd like to get them back for you, too, but it doesn't happen all the time. This first one is gives you kind of look at the overview of the building pad. If you look at the top right corner, I put the building key of how we're the building looks and how we're formatting ourselves through the building. The way this picture is, you need to quarter turn it clockwise, and that's how you would see it. I tried to play around with it. I could not get it. I was getting frustrated. But that's a good look for the building pad. And HUD, thanks for sending these drone photos over to me. This is the irrigation being installed in your practice fields. The irrigation is very near completion. So I think they'll finish this week, barring snowmageddon or whatever we're going to get or not get. They're moving along these areas very well. There's possibility if things go right, we can get sod on these areas, probably in about 3 to 4 weeks. The concrete foundations, they're ongoing right now throughout the building. They have Area H pretty much done. They're going to be moving into the next area. They're doing the best they can. It's tough this time of year. Like, they couldn't pour today because you're not allowed to pour concrete when it's freezing. But they're there pumping water after it rains and doing everything they can to keep progress rolling. The mason has started. He has his masonry foundations in. He's working in the mechanical room area right now. Those are the deepest foundations, so he's going to be a little bit of time getting those in. This is the concrete apron around the field, hockey field, as I call it. We need to get this installed so we can get the under drainage and stone in, and after that they'll put the turf on it, or the rug, as I call it. This is a good overview of your practice fields. As you can see, your football field's no longer there. The lights are still there, but they'll be coming down soon. And up next for us, foundations and concrete foundations there at K&H. Continue masonry foundations. They started some underslab work. The electrician has started some of the underslab stuff. Continue site work, building demolition, which I think the two buildings demolition should be completed this week. And continue work on the field hockey field practice fields. So considering the weather, we made some decent progress. Does anybody have any questions, concerns?
Just want to say thank you again to Dean and to Brian. HUD and I, when possible, are able to sit in on the construction meetings, which are every 2 weeks, down in the trailer.
Yep.
And
I didn't do the attendance today.
They're efficient also, and as we proceed through, but items get brought up on the table, the architect joins in the process also. So thank you to ROIJ for their work and for keeping us all engaged with that. I also wanted to pass around, and you can you have one?
Yeah, it was in our packet.
Thank you. I wanted to, and so Brian and Dean, so that you know, what I've given the board is the top sheet only of an example of a payment voucher for a bill that we receive along the way. And what I want you to pay attention to is the number of signatures that start the process. And it begins with a construction manager who verifies. It goes to the architect who verifies. It goes through the, you see the notaries. It comes from the financial officer of the company that's producing the bill. Mary Ann goes through it. HUD reviews it. I review it. I think last count we have six or seven sets of eyeballs on an invoice when it comes through, because we want it to be right. We also want to show that there's a control process that's involved along the way with that. And just want you to have a degree of comfort, and because I give you POs, PVs, and information items, but there's a lot of controls in place when it comes to this project. Any other questions for Mr. Johnson or Mr. Bassett? You're welcome to stay. There might be something to eat down in the kitchen, but you're excused unless you really want to stay. It's up to you.
Good.
Thank you.
Be safe tomorrow.
Monthly financial report, Statfield.
Tonight I'm going to be presenting the monthly financials as of January 31st. At this point in the year, we are 58.3% of the fiscal year complete and 57.7% of payrolls complete. In January, our tax receipts were $122,007. And so far this year, that put us at receiving 99.6% of our anticipated tax receipts. And if you look at last year, we were at 99.7, so we're right in line with last year. On the cost center report, if you look at the salary line, it looks really good. We've only spent 52.8% of our salary budget, and we're at 57.7% of our payrolls complete, so we're spending under budget on our salary line, so on our local salary line, so that's very good. We're really looking good in pretty much all areas. If you go to the last page, we've spent 51.8% of our total budget, and we're at 58.3% of the fiscal year complete. So overall, our spending has been consistently under budget, and you know, our spending looks really good. That's all I have this evening. Does anybody have any questions?
Thanks, Ms. Tapfield. District purchase orders, change orders, vouchers. On the cover sheet, the first thing I would tell you is that we have two deletions. You see the purchase of the two transit vans from Pacifico Ford. They are being pulled off for your consideration for this evening. We were pulling from the state contract, which is a mandatory use contract, and taking 15 passenger vans and converting them into 10s. And the state said you can't do that because they were built as 15s. In the past, we would get the 15 and take the back seat out of the back, and it would languish in a storage building somewhere. So we've gotten a couple of other options, and so van purchase will be coming back to the board at a future date. The other two items are Microsoft licenses for our technology, Microsoft licenses within the school itself, and New Direction Solutions, the ProCare Psychological Services. When our last school psychologist left us, the funding for that came through grants and grant funding. We've converted that from delivery of service from a personnel standpoint into contracted service. If the board approves the agenda tonight, and as we clap our hands and say thank you for a school psychologist, then this contract may change also, because there will be a shift of services back from contracted services to a real live person. And that's something that's always good. So they're the only two items that I have for you. On there, on the back, are all of the bills. Vickers has put this forward in brilliant yellow. And so that we have our, you can see who's been paid, the amount of money that they've been paid as the work goes forward. So the example of the payment structure, one of those happened with each one of these vouchers that came through. So, I think there is a, and this is a credit to HUD and to Mary Ann too, we don't, bills don't stay around here very long. The example that I showed you, I think it was a one-day turnaround for three signatures, and contractors aren't used to getting paid as promptly as they get paid on our program, and we think that will help us down the road when we need something. I don't know what that is, but I'd sooner be in a we need situation.
Just
FFNE. Furniture, fixtures, equipment.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions on other questions on purchase orders, change orders? Moving on. One other thing as an information item. We have a number of student accounts in Mr. Bogger's student account activity, which we have classified as dormant, meaning that there's money that was put into these accounts in most cases 5-6 years ago and hasn't been touched since, but the dollars have remained within the account and we're declaring them dormant. We checked, no one has forgotten about it. Somebody got $325 for doing something, it went into a student account and there it rested. In order to stay with trying to clean up the student accounts and programs along the way, we're going to convert the dormant accounts, which had a total value of $1,700 and some odd along the way, and we're going to put that towards the purchase of a new mascot uniform that Mr. Bogger is proposing along the way. Mascot uniforms are more expensive than you might think they are, and we haven't had one for quite a while because I think it fell apart. Derrickson has been helping. We're putting some things together, but rather than have dollars that were meant for student good to be sitting in dormant accounts, we wanted to take that and roll it into the cost for the mascot so that everyone can benefit from it. I'm just letting you know that that's what we're doing with the dormant account program. Item D, school choice lottery results, held on January the 29th. The process went smoothly. Thank you to Steve Persilio and his diligence for managing the documentation and the relationship with the Data Service Center. I believe we ended up at about 780 applications along the way. Some students, I believe there were 40 or 50 who did not complete the application process, either didn't turn in the documentation that was necessary to be considered, just simply didn't complete. We had about 90 sibling and or employees, children who were in the applicant pool. And we usually hover around 100 in that result, and then the lottery gets applied against the rest. We ended up with, I don't know why I find this so fascinating, but of those applications, we had 12 sets of twins. That seems amazing, doesn't it?
That is
12 sets of twins, and usually when one twin is accepted, we take both. which then throws our target number was 375. So in a situation like that, it wouldn't be unusual to end up at 380, 381, and we ended up at 375 on the money, which I thought was fascinating, having 12 sets of twins. Some of them did get accepted into the program, but we were at 375. Mr. Johnson was here as a witness to the process and to the program. If the board approves us later this evening, we will be sending out 375 acceptance letters on Thursday of this week. The acceptance letter has already been forwarded to the Data Service Center. Again, pending your approval, they are sent by the Data Service Center to the families along the way. There will also be a communication for folks who didn't make it, and as in past years, there are more I'm sorry letters than congratulation letters. And that's part of another discussion. But any questions about the lottery and or the list? It truly is. We have a Zoom meeting with Data Service Center over the screen. They push a button, and I would tell you 10 seconds later, they say your lottery is done. Raven Academy recommendation. Raven Academy, as the board is aware, we've been running a program for 8 half days during the summer. And we've extended an invitation, we have advertised or made known through social media that a Raven Academy would be available for 7th and 8th grade students considering an exploratory program into the career technical programs. We've had a decent turnout during those 8 days. Some sessions are more heavily attended than others. And then the second component of Raven Academy has been our credit recovery program, whereby students who fail a particular class, we've discussed this before, have the ability to come in and take credit recovery in order to maintain their credit, maintain their standing, and be able to maintain going forward. Two issues with this along the way, and we're going to be making a change to Raven Academy in a couple of capacities. And so I think the best place for me to start is with a struggle that we're having with evaluating the preparedness of the rising eighth graders who will be coming to us as ninth grade. So we've made a recommendation to you tonight for 375 students to come here as ninth graders next year. Unfortunately, and some of this is opinion, but I think the data will show us this also, the preparedness of those ninth graders continues to get broader and broader and broader in terms of their preparation to be able to accept the academic work when coming to school, primarily in reading ability, in math skills along the way, and also being prepared to do that. So we've been having conversations about how can we do a better job of serving students who arrive here as ninth graders. And some of the gobbledygook is on the whiteboard there behind Mrs. Withers, but what we're looking at are 3 full-day programs for students. And I'm speaking to the first half of Raven Academy now, where we concentrate our efforts on the 375 students who will be coming to us as freshmen. And so the eighth graders, if you will, that would be coming, but concentrating on the 375. And we would do the following with them. We would consider it like an orientation on steroids, where they would come in. They would be pre-tested on their English skills, on their math skills. We will not received, remember we've talked about this before, we don't get roll-up of data from the districts of where they're coming from until the second week of July. I don't want to be held prisoner waiting for that data to come forward. If in doing so, we want to gather this information during the month of June. They would come for 3 full days, transportation, breakfast and lunch. They would get CTE orientation along the way that they would have a choice on. They'd have their medical forms. They'd have an opportunity to meet with their counselors. They would go through the testing program, special education. That official data comes with the rollover, but there might be some indications within the student data form that we'd started this year with the application process that would help with that also. iPad documentation, nutrition services, getting those papers filled out in order to be ready for the beginning of school along the way, and to start that program over 3 days as opposed to spreading it out to 8 half days over 2 weeks. So in other words, we get them here, it will lower our cost involved in doing that. Teachers, we've been told that the teachers are encouraged by this plan, and if they're coming to school, they'd sooner come to school for a full day than for a half day, and to have those 3 days be effective use of their time doing that. And we would take the data primarily from the pre-testing and evaluate it and make decisions about what does the student schedule look like in September, because if they need remediation, if they need help with their English skills, math skills, all of those types of things, to put forth a schedule that allows them to do that. And the goal being that when everybody's ready for 10th grade, that we have a model that allows students to have a higher degree of success at 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, as opposed to dropping out of school or returning to their district of residence. We want students to remain here. We want them to stay here. But our student population has changed, and therefore we think our model needs to change for the ninth graders who are coming in across the board. So that represents our plan for eighth graders coming in. It does mean that there will not be an exploratory for seventh graders. It means that the school will be focused on the 375 eighth graders who will be coming to us, or they'll be invited come and be part of that program. There'll be a parent component of this. We'll ask parents to come in the afternoon and we'll talk about their responsibilities, and or evening program for parents, so that they have a clear understanding of what's involved for them also along the way. Any questions on that portion? Second portion is credit recovery. Here's our problem with credit recovery. About this time of the year, the student has figured out that they choose not to do well in their class that they're currently taking, because they know that the safety net is available under the old model in 8 half days of credit recovery, and we put you into a room, you complete the coursework, you get the grade, and you move on. And so your incentive or your motivation to do well in the class today, tomorrow, disappears from some of our young scholars. And we want to propose two changes. Number one, to communicate that the grade to get into the credit recovery program would increase from a 55 to a 60. And that number two, you'd only be eligible to take one credit for the credit recovery program. This will probably drop lower the number of students who take the credit recovery program. And then we go on another parent campaign along with our TEC academic schedule that says your child's in danger of failing a class or multiple classes. And we're at the midpoint now of the next marking period, and we include the TEC academic schedule as we did with the letter last year that says, please encourage your student to buckle down, to take the TEC academic coursework, or better yet, just do a good job in class and get through the year with a passing grade, and then we won't have to be having conversations about credit recovery and to do those types of things along the way. We had a really big safety net for kids, and in my opinion, it's worked against us in terms of students putting forth a valid effort during the regular school year. So there are two pretty significant changes to how we're addressing the summer program, summer school, summer orientation program for the rising eighth graders and also for our current students. Any questions, comments?
I'm sure you told us last year, but when we did the material and made them more aware of academics, how much did the attendance go up?
I'll tell you, Mr. Johnson, I don't remember exactly, but I can tell you that attendance got better. I had 6 parent appointments. What do you mean my child's in danger? I didn't know. That's another discussion with the staff, right? And assurance and a thank you. Thank you for telling me that my child was there, and you'll see a better effort. And we did. I wish I had the exact numbers on there. I will tell you the other thing that's happened this year in addition to that is that the plan and the communication of ninth graders interviewing to get into their technical program as 10th graders on March the 13th, according to the teachers that I've spoken to, has sent a ripple effect through the school also. Because students know that they have to apply. If they really want to be in auto body, then they're going to have to sit in front of John Jones and some advisory committee people and have a conversation about why they think they want this career and this program along the way. And it happens on March 13th. What teachers have told me is that there has been a more sincere effort on the part of our ninth graders during exploratory than there has been in the past. I think that's the intention of all of this, right? To have sincerity of why you're taking the exploratory, or to make the decision it's not your program, right? And to go forward from there. They're not going to interview for every program. I think, Mr. Bauger, are we at 4 interview sections for ninth graders? I believe it's 4. So they're going to pick out their 4. The final decision about which program they will get into rests with Mr. Bauger and the administrative team, but they're going to have to sit in front of their teacher in order to be able to do that. We had some nervousness about, because the letters that go out on Thursday will say the same thing to the rising eighth graders. Here are our expectations, that you have to maintain your academic and vocational standing, that you have to, you know, conform to the norms and the rules of the school district, and that you need to think about that before you decide to accept. We will also send a letter to the current students, the letter that I've been speaking of, and to their parents, and saying, it's February, but we need you to get on track if you want to have a successful conclusion to the year. I think taking that approach has been beneficial for our students, and I think it's been beneficial for our parents. I still had to bring you a hard recommendation in June or July where we had 16 students who didn't return. I'm hoping that number's much lower this year coming up, but we'll see. I'm on the way. I'm hoping we get down to one hand. I'm hoping we get down to no hands. But we'll see what happens. Other questions or comments?
What's the passing grade now, 65 or 70?
55.
That's
and what's again for credit recovery?
To get into credit recovery, it was
55. Yeah, but what's
a
passing
grade?
65 or 70.
So we're looking to move that to be able to go to credit recovery 60%.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I'm a math teacher. I understand.
Okay. Item F. Field trips, we have 2 for your consideration tonight, the JROTC to Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and the baseball team to Myrtle Beach, and Mr. Bauger is going to give you some details about those two requests.
We'll start with the JRTC. I apologize. I was typing up some walkthroughs, actually. So I was thinking we were starting at 5. JRTC has actually adjusted the day that they want to leave. They're going to be leaving on March 7th versus March 6th. They're still returning on the 9th. It's a fairly low-cost trip. The only thing that we really have to pay for is meals. They're cheaper because we're going to be eating on base. So the price and the cost of that is much lower. The cost is obviously for transportation and they're staying on base. So this is an opportunity for our students to experience life as a military officer, and also they're going to be going through some drills with the folks down there. There will be three chaperones, one male, two males and a female, that are going to be attending Mrs. Birmingham, Mr. Marshall, and Mr. Rush will all be gone. Approximately seven, up to no more than seven students will be attending that trip. And it's a good experience. We've gone down there a couple times. Last summer they spent a whole week down in that area. And we took about 15 or 20 kids down that summer, so it was a good experience. So that's our Coast Guard JRTC trip down in North Carolina.
And Mr. Barger, I apologize for interrupting. We also had some success. The last drill competition for ROTC.
That is correct. We actually got an email this weekend, Sunday as well. It's interesting because our JRTC group is asking for more time in the gym and other areas because our kids are doing better at drills. And our drill team is winning some awards locally. And I think that part of this is what they're doing down there. Summer because it really inspired. Because if you come into our building around 6:30 in the morning, our ROTC kids are here. Before some of our staff members, they were here a couple of. They're here almost every evening, practicing in the commons area. And they're looking forward to when we're getting in the new building and having sort of a separate space that they can use on a consistent basis. So it's pretty cool.
How many kids are in the program?
We're almost at 100 total in the program. Good. So, and we're continuing to grow. I think we have, as we all know, that have been around education for a long time. One of the reasons why people take courses is because the people that teach the course, and you have two people that have high expectations, but also can connect with kids. And I think that great combination of skill has really helped that program.
One of the things that we have to do with future board meetings is to do some showcase on some programs, and we'll make sure that ROTC is in that. I'd like program leaders to come in and spend 10 minutes with you and explain here's what we're doing in our program and those types of things, like what Mr. Bogger has just explained, but I think it would be good for everyone to get to meet each other and have those conversations and understand what's going on in the program.
The most amazing thing Lisa says, and only for me, is when you walk by the mix of kids, mm-hmm. It's not male oriented, it's not female, it's a combination of every kind of kid that we have in our building, so it's well representative of all of our kids and our great community. That's a lot of programs don't end up in that way because we didn't control it. But a lot of that. So that's that trip. Baseball is a little more extensive, so we're looking from March 18th to the 22nd into Myrtle Beach, North Carolina. Try to build some team bonding together. Total cost is about $9,000. That includes trip, experience, the baseball games, lodging, accommodations down there. It'll cost each student, he's asked for $250 from each student to offset some of the lodging costs. At a recent meeting that he's had with parents, if any student has financial difficulty, he has requested them to come forward. I have a pot of money that I would use, and he is also willing to use, Mr. Jefferson's also willing to use some of his funds out of a baseball account. Majority of the cost of this is all coming out of that baseball account, with the exception of $250 per student to get this experience along the way.
anyway, so that's sort of their line. Originally, it was we thought it was around 6,000, but the total cost was around 9,000. There'll be four adult chaperones going from that. Four vans. We've also asked baseball provide two vans from Fleet Services because we know that vans are very coveted right now with our spring sports being off property and a lot of field trip season as we get into this. So he is providing out of the baseball account two vans for us to be able to use while he uses the 10 passenger vans to transport our students down to Myrtle Beach. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Fogger. Item G, air quality. Mr. A.
Would you like me to hit G, H, and K all at once?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Always like to bundle if we can.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And unfortunately, the repair and maintenance plan caused me to get more powerful glasses. So I'm going to run through my facility update backwards, if everyone is okay with that. So first we have, on my list anyway, the indoor air quality complaint procedure. And this is legislated that every district is to have procedures in place by May 1st for anyone having a potential air quality complaint for the district or any facility on campus. So we always like to try to get things ahead of things. So we're coming to you just as informational for the air quality complaint. It does not require board approval, it's just informational. It's per Title 14, chapter, or Section 4303. And we have wording here that complaint forms may be found in the high school office. We'll be able to download them or print them from the district website or by using a hyperlink in the posting as well. They will submit any complaints to me or whoever might be Director of Admin Services, and then we will follow up, communicate it to the board as well, at the next board meeting if there is a complaint. We will follow that up to the board, whatever the results are, and to the complainant as well. This is one of the situations where you can't really have an anonymous complaint because you do need to figure out exactly what they're complaining about or what their concern is. So if they don't give all the details, we do need to follow up with them. And we also want to let them know that we did check it out and whatever those things are. Created a committee with my peers across the state. We shamelessly stole from the EPA, has an existing form. We tailored that to the school district. And then we also used Polytech. They had a working online form as well. So we melded them together, and so it's three documents. It went out to all of the districts across the state, and they will be using the same or similar forms as well. So that is the informational piece. Are there any questions about the air quality complaint procedures?
So I'm assuming this one is just they do paper and pencil, and this is the one that's online that they can
correct. So
fill in the things. Okay.
So this one is either the hard copy, or you can print it and right. Fill it out. The one on the back here is where they fill it out online, and it's submitted directly to me by email. These are already loaded, ready to go after tonight's meeting. We wanted to hold off on it until we did just give it out, just in case there were any questions or concerns about that. So Ms. Derrickson, Josh Cundy from the IT department have worked together on that as well. Okay. Moving on to the annual Sussex County Vocational Technical School District Repair and Maintenance Plan. This must be completed yearly and approved by the board annually. before it is then communicated back up to various state officials, agencies. I think we're up to 10 different people that it has to go to. So the upside to us is, if you look at the title, it says 2024 to 2028. Because we are in the process of building and replacing or upgrading what remains here, I did receive permission to do sort of an all-encompassing plan, and noted in parentheses, this will be renewed after new campus construction and renovations are completed. So if you look through the plan, it says it pretty much exactly the same things it did last year, with the update for the submittals for board approval, which was 12 February, which I will change that since the board meeting was changed. And then once, if it is received tonight, I'll add that and that as well. And then I'll update, submit it tomorrow to DOE. And that, like I said, does include various state agencies and legislators as well. In general, the first page of the plan is just our demographic or basic information. We are supposed to be able, on the yellow box in the first page, we're supposed to be able to choose our school and it can populate all that information. It doesn't work for us, and it's not been fixed, so we entered it manually. And then you will see on the following pages, very small writing because we're trying to fit it onto one page to save trees. And it lists everything, mold, mildew, plumbing, roofs, site, you name it, it's in there. And it asks for conditions, if there are any issues, and what the plan is or what they are. So almost all of ours say it's not life or safety critical, not interfering with daily operations, however, eradicated with the construction of a new facility and renovation of spaces, not slated for demolition. And that is the blanket statement throughout. And then the final set, where it says exterior, building exterior, this is what the state will be using in the future to help justify certificates of necessity. Each one of those areas, we had to calculate, and this was a team effort across the departments. We had individuals going out, literally counting bricks. Then we took that and extrapolated across the campus to get an estimate for the number of exterior bricks. You plug it in the formula, it tells you what that current value is, and then you decide how much percentage of life is left in your bricks. Square footage of blacktop, square footage of concrete, tile, ceiling tiles, everything. So that is what the state will be using moving forward, just for everyone's edification, not to over explain or get too far in the weeds with it. So any questions about the plan as it is presented? Alrighty. So now the fun part. And as always, Mr. Johnson and his crew like to take some of my thunder, but that's okay, because we're all on the same team. If we do follow down on my submission, just hitting the highlights, obviously demo is ongoing. Storage of moving plans are ongoing. We started moving some of the band stuff into the new storage building, and we'll be working on a plan to move the weight room and things like that. So those are all going swimmingly. Oddly enough, we are still looking at some finishes, getting some clarification on a variety of things, some expected, some maybe should have been done previously. Dental area corrections have been approved, and so they're getting shop drawings for that to include, which is a good thing because it's on the first level. They need to have pipes and things in the, under the slab. And nutrition services, as you saw, that was one of the change orders. There were a couple pieces of equipment that we don't use. We swap them out for something more conducive to the program. And of course, I talked about the annual facility assessment there. Show you these real quick, and I had two more things. No, one more thing to go there. So as we see, it is an ever-changing landscape here. This is just a ground shot today. As you can see, the lovely yellow metal B-gem is gone. Last week it was still about a quarter there. And as you can see, about half of the old grounds maintenance shop.
That's gone
as well. This was this morning.
Yeah, so it's gone. I would have bought her.
And as you can see, there's the excavator with the grapple on it, and it was going to town first thing this morning. This is where, sadly, the CTC was. Greenhouse was behind it. So as you can see, this nice straight shot through. Just to the right here, big piles of stone and things ready to ramp up for more site work. And as we talked, the stadium is completely gone, save the poles, and this parking lot is now completely dirt as well in preparation for the road and roundabout and all of those things. Don't want to brag, but I was able to rotate. I'll take it where I can get it. But yes, to Mr. Dean Johnson's point, this back corner is where they started, and this is the mechanical room. So as you move this direction, we're going through band, chorus, dramas down here, auditorium, and then you can see even over here, this is where early child education will be, the daycare, and this the center courtyard. So you can see all of these things. This is the drive-in. Not yet paved, but it's there. This is the parent drop-off. They'll come directly in, and then their classrooms are in here. Coming down here, you see the cafeteria, you have culinary, and all of those things moving in to the kitchen here. And then you get the unfinished part over here. So if you looked at the jagged path to which they are sticking for all the work, it's coming across, down, and jumping up, then back down and around. So that kind of maybe give you a little perspective there. This again, this is probably something you haven't really seen or we've not paid too much attention for it too, but down on the right corner, that's the new cross-country hill. It's also where Denrec has allowed them to keep some spoils. So they've stockpiled topsoil and things like that. So it grows and shrinks, but for the most part, this is where that it will be. And ROTC, we've already, Kinsley has already put the telephone poles for their Raider competition practice field or area. We have two sets of poles 50 feet apart, and they use those to build rope bridges and then to get all the cadets across, and it's a timed thing for those competitions. As we said, buildings are gone. We are looking at, they're meeting with fire marshal to make sure we can do it, but this is a temporary stormwater. They will dig a new stormwater here, and it'll come out into the roadway some, so as long as it's approved to be done in one swoop, that's what obviously is preferred, so they don't have to dig half of it. And moving back here, again, a lot of what we've seen, the parking lots, down into here. And again, this was the parking lot for the stadium, completely gone. Practice fields, they are, like they said, the irrigation is almost done in those areas. They're, even with the snow that we've had, they're moving right along there. So lots of good work happening. Any questions on that? Okay, so, in addition to the reports that have to be submitted, we also have a lead line, line 120 or something. Anyway, it's a report that has to be submitted every year that talks about if we have any known lead piping or joints for our drinking water. So that has to be submitted. That should be submitted tomorrow up to the state. We also have backflow prevention that has to be submitted annually, so those are coming up. We're going to do that in March as we move forward. Most recently, though, just informational, and we sent an email out last Friday, just, again, informational. this last round of lead and copper testing for the drinking water, they're sticking to it that we received a procedural violation. We were supposed to take 20 samples for drinking water, and our techs took 17 out of the 20. They send us the bottles that say where you're supposed to take the samples from, and you're bound by that. So our techs took 17. They called the testing company because three of those were not available. Two were from the CTC building, which had been demolished, and one was from the environmental building, which that fixture had been removed when it tested high. It was removed and not replaced because that building will come down this summer. So our tech was given the guidance to just note that on the sample when the report comes out. Followed that procedure. We were told from the Office of Drinking Water that they wouldn't have told him that. He didn't send in an email, so it's a telephone call, whatever. So based on that, again, it's just a little black eye on us because we pride ourselves in always meeting all of these things. But 17 out of 20, they actually tested undetectable for lead and copper. So it didn't even meet the minimum that they can detect it. So excellent, 17 out of 20. The three that weren't there. So what we have to do is what we did Friday. We let everyone know. It is posted conspicuously around the buildings as well. And then in March, we're going to do another round of testing. We have until the end of June to do it. We're going to go ahead and knock it out now. And then we have to do that every 6 months for the next two cycles. Once we're in compliance there, we're back on the normal schedule. Not a big deal in all reality, but we would like to see it always be 20 out of 20 with no issues. So lots of emails back and forth, clarifications, corrections. Because of this, I did submit a new sampling plan. Office of Drinking Water accepted it, and that plan is we are only testing in areas that are going to remain. So we do not have to redo the plan until we move into the new building. And once we move into the new building, we will redo the plan for it to be only the new building. So it should be good for 20, 40, 60 years, however long the building is.
Okay. One very important question.
Yes.
How many exterior bricks did we have, and what was your excluded amount?
Well, I would have to look at the chart here. I can definitely get you that information, but I will have to look at Actually, here's the funny thing. I just turned to it. It says our exterior brick is right now worth approximately $29,850,000, and they are at $39.80 a square foot. We had approximately 750,000 square feet.
Could you be more specific?
Of exterior brick. So, yes. Kyle Furness, a tech grad, did an awesome job at gathering a lot of these numbers
cool.
from all the crews and putting it together.
Together.
So, all right. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Athey. I think I've told you this story before when we did the walkthrough with DOE when we were doing our CN justification. We were in the lobby down by Computer Tech, and Mr. Johnson, you brought this up. So we were standing there talking, and the bricks outside the lobby exterior are not the best, and Mr. Athey went outside and went up to one of the bricks and actually pulled it, and it broke. Got pieces in my office, and we gave it to the reps from DOE, and we said we think that it's time to do something about the building, and they didn't say a word. So the exterior brick was a useful tool. I'm not so sure he hadn't chiseled it earlier in the day. And
got to pull some more.
I know. Don't do it. Don't do it. We need him along the way. Thank you. Item I, Dr. Peel, gun-free school zone policy.
All right. Another policy for us to update. We received a gentle reminder from the Department of Education that based upon regulation 603 that was passed last summer, we needed to update our gun-free school policy. So you'll see the writing in red with the old policy that was struck through with the new language in green. What the major difference, there's a difference between a deadly weapon and a firearm. And then a possession of a firearm does come with a one-year expulsion from school. So you can see the two definitions. We added in the exceptions that this is just based upon law, the nine exceptions that we are afforded there for possession of a firearm. So a deadly weapon would not require a mandatory expulsion, a firearm would. Not to say that it couldn't be, just that it doesn't require.
You interpret this to mean that if you have a firearm in the motor vehicle and it's locked, you're still in violation and you could
be expelled for you. A student, you could, yes.
They're specific about that in the code. It says shall be.
Now, all that would be through a hearing and then there are room for whatever exceptions or situation you may lie with.
So that's first reading for you.
Yep.
Any other questions for Dr. Peel? Thank you, sir. Also for first reading, a minor modification to our freshman admissions school choice policy, which the board recently passed last year regarding lottery and building capacity. On the second page, we had and are requesting, at one time we had indicated that the student data form would be sent or be completed by the student's district of residence. Leaving the policy the same, but we're taking the student's district of residence out of the requirement, and just making the parent submit that data and that information, which is what we asked for this year. Why do we do that? Because of the amount of change that we were bringing to the application process, plus because of the process itself. It was going to inundate the guidance departments of the districts of residence, where they had to go through and verify the applications of approximately 800 students in the county. And so we're trusting the parents to be honest with the information as they sign, because they're attesting on the student data form that the information that's on the form is true and correct. So it removed a process, and this policy will probably come back before the board, you know, as we continue on. This is a policy, and I'm sure Adele's going to talk to us about HB 28 later in the deal, but the policy, in order to be in compliance with school choice law, had to be part of this process. And again, everything else that the board approved is there. It just removes the requirement for the school, for the student's district of residence to have to sign off on the process. So that's before you for first reading. Ms. Vickers had changed the formatting. The old policy is represented in mauve, and the what's to replace it would be in green, and it would come back before you again in March. Any questions? Very good. Moving on. Mr. AD being efficient, dealt with item K, and we're going to go to the adult education update. Mrs. Whaley, she's got a special guest with her tonight. Mr. Haig.
Very good.
Thank you. So, I appreciate it.
Well, Mrs. Whaley, the floor is yours.
Okay, good evening, everybody. I want to start with some enrollment highlights I have for you here on your handout. As of the end of the second quarter, We had 1,332 ESL students enrolled, plus another 66 on a waiting list. This is 27.5% growth from last year. 44% of the ESL students in adult education programs in the state of Delaware are enrolled with us. 46% of our students have already made an educational functioning level gain for this year, and this was as of the end of second quarter, it's higher now. That was compared to 35% statewide. So not only we have the biggest enrollment, we're having the largest outcomes. Really, really proud of our staff. In our ABE and GED program, we have 353 students. When I wrote this, there were 11 that had earned their GED. It's now up to 15. And we're projecting at least 30 for the year. And we've already exceeded federal goals for civics and financial literacy for those students, and our goal for educational functioning level for ABE level 6 students is at 100%, so we've exceeded that. For Groves, the Groves High School, we have 178 students. Currently 12 have earned their have completed their graduation requirements. It was 11 when I wrote this, and we have several more that are right there. By the end of the month, I think we'll have at least 3 or 4 more. So when we had 11, that was 30.5% of current statewide graduates to date. And there are 7 Groves programs in the state. I'm going to put it in perspective for you. And we are confident that we are going to have at least 50 graduates this year based on students that we have and what they still need to complete to in order to graduate. Our in-school credit program, which is our credit recovery program, has 253 students enrolled as of second quarter. This program has seen a 50% drop in enrollment from last year, but half of all students enrolled in credit recovery in the state are enrolled with us. So I think it's been a statewide drop. Hopefully that just means that kids are doing a better job. Maybe, you know, that we've come out of COVID, they're more called up. But we for the second semester, we have, I believe, what I looked at it today, was we have 23 students from Sussex Tech enrolled in credit recovery after school for the semester. Let's see, health professions and nursing, we have 214 enrolled, and there is a waiting list for those programs as well. Our new dual enrollment EKG class has started. Mrs. Doyle's supposed to be sending me some pictures, so I'll be posting those on Facebook and in our newsletter.
That's cool.
Our apprenticeship and trades, we have 638 students plus 157 on a waiting list. And that program is also seeing 27.5% growth from last year. So Mike is rocking and rolling too, and he has a brand new front end loader. That was
look out.
It was in the paper. Coast TV, because I knew I had it in there yesterday.
I don't care if it snows now.
Yeah, he'll be out there. He'll class in the snow, pushing the snow.
I made copies of all the keys for Hunt's guys so they can get this parking lot clean.
Wait a minute.
And driver's ed has had 20% growth, and that one, it kind of surprised me. That program just sort of flies under the radar. Shantae's does such a great job of running it. It's just very, very smooth, and don't hear much out of her. It's, you know, she doesn't advertise her program at all, but she did. I ran the numbers twice. I'm like, really? Wow. I said, Shantae, did you know 20% higher enrollment this year than last year? She said, really? Any questions about enrollment?
Keep it up.
So you're north of that 35-12 number.
Yes. Yeah, now we are. And at that time, last year we had 35% growth program-wide, and so we're another 15% higher than that as at the end of the second quarter. Dual enrollment, we have students from Sussex Tech, Laurel, Cape, and Seaford currently enrolled in CNA, phlebotomy, and EKG. registration is underway for forklift and the tech rotation project. that Mike does with the construction trades. And on Friday, he hosted a group from Woodbridge High School that came over here on the in-service day, and they got to learn about apprenticeship. They toured the shops. They got to play on these simulators.
So
their counselors brought them over. So that was a good day. Bit of disappointing news. We submitted our application for the Superstars in Education, and we were notified that we did not make the next round for that. But we will apply again next year. And then I have on here the graduation dates for you. Again, you all should have received an invitation in your email to RSVP to the events that you can attend. Any questions? We'll turn it over to Mike, who's going to talk to you about nationwide growth and apprenticeship and how Delaware ranks in all of that.
Thanks, Kevin. So we included in your board packet a 50-plus page report that was put out by the AFA, which is Apprenticeships for America, and I highlighted and separated a handful of pages that mentions Delaware, which I thought were pretty interesting data points to bring up. So on page 11, Delaware, Sussex County, Newcastle County, Kent County, three apprenticeship programs in state. We are fourth in the nation in growth. So percentage-wise, we're growing faster than almost every other state in our country. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, being competitive and applying for funds that update our programs and our equipment, that expand our programs to offer more apprenticeship training, more students, and then start new programs like heavy equipment and CDL. It was kind of cool. You could see the report as you read through it, the timing of it all. There's a shift in leadership here, so I'd like to give kudos to Dr. Carson for his vision, his shift in emphasis on the adult education world, and having that kind of vision and that shift and that promotion and that support has really helped us grow. So like Kelly was mentioning, we had, you know, approximately in 2019 about 325-350 apprenticeship students, and right now we're sitting at like 600 plus, so it's a huge shift. Another data point in that report was page 16. Delaware is second in the nation in youth apprenticeship, which is huge. And I'd like to give credit to that number and that statement that Dr. Carson says, right? He says there's more no's that go out into our county than there are yeses, right? And so we saw that as an opportunity, right? And so we were trying to figure out, how do we offer what these students want sooner, before they become adults and before they graduate? And that was through the YARG grant. Sounds like you're a pirate, YARG. That's a youth apprenticeship and readiness grant. And we were able to use those funds to help kind of tackle that market. And what's really neat is that's when Kelly came aboard, right? And so right when I was exhausting, you know, my connections in the county, trying to get youth into our programs and figure out, wait a minute, we're an adult education program. Our policy says 18 and older, and the other counties are a little bit, you know, hesitant about, you know, changing that model. And Kelly was like, hey, I know all these people over here, and talk to this person and that person. So with Kelly's support and her willingness to allow us to change our policies and allow 16 and older into our program, so to take that grant, where we're looking at policy, we're looking at the system, we're trying to overcome barriers and make changes. And that's when Kelly swooped in and said, oh yeah, let's do this. This is a great idea. And so because of that, you know, you've got
all these things kind of happening at once, and so we, you know, we're second in the nation now for apprentices, and so I think it's amazing. About a third of our program is between the ages of 16 and 24, maybe a little bit more, and I think that has a lot to do with that work and that support. And that's the outreach to other districts, and Kelly support, and I mean, our advertising, our social media, the TV, the radio, the billboard, we've never really had that before. And so that's really cool that, you know, we've got that kind of skill set at the leadership level to help get the word out about our programs and expand. We expanded our welding program, all new equipment, with Mr. Kitt helping us build an extra booths within the shop, adding ventilation. And so when I first got here, we had about 12 students annually in the welding apprenticeship program. Now we're doing 16 to 18. And we're also offering programs on Saturdays. And so that kind of helped that out. And then on page 40, another, I guess, reason why I think Delaware is doing so well here in growth is that the craft training bill, SB 184, as RYJ mentioned it in their presentation, and that's where contractors, employers are to have employees and apprentices enrolled in programs in order to be compliant to bid on public works. So that's helped somewhat. We're getting more phone calls for maybe programs don't typically have a lot of enrollment, like carpentry, sprinkler fitter, heavy equipment. Traditionally, those companies don't really participate so much so in apprenticeship, and I thought there was a couple of reasons, right? There weren't many comprehensive dynamic programs out with simulators and actual real equipment. So we're getting phone calls from companies from other states because of this bill. So when you combine just the shift in leadership and being competitive and looking at our market and a little bit of support legislatively, you know, Delaware is fourth in the nation for overall growth and second in the nation for youth apprenticeship. And so what's really neat is, too, I think no matter what the administration is doing in D.C., it seems that there's a huge focus on registered apprenticeship, expanding apprenticeship. I think funds are going to be allocated through this new administration at the federal level and state level to help grow apprenticeships. So I would imagine we're going to continue to burst at the seams. So just want to end the board meeting with a really long read. It's really interesting, but Delaware's mentioned in there a few times, and we're doing good work, and I think it's great that we're all part of that. So kudos to all of us for, you know, like working hard and seeing the vision. So let's say thank you. Anybody have any questions about the report?
Awesome.
Thank you.
Your guest
speaker
graduation is.
Oh yeah, so please tell the graduation. So I guess this was Kelly's idea. So there was a executive order 1 that the governor came out with. It was to form an apprenticeship, I guess, landscape committee. They want to kind of look at the apprenticeship as a whole. And Kelly was like, "Oh, let's invite him to graduation." And he accepted.
Yeah,
so
we're on his schedule.
We're on his schedule. He'll let us, what he say, he'll let us know.
His secretary will confirm 3 weeks in advance.
So there's a good chance his focus on apprenticeship and the executive order and the timing of Kelly's like invite, there's a good chance that our new governor will be at our graduation.
Yeah, we're on his schedule, so I should know for 100%.
That's good news.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Information and recognitions, Erickson.
Mr. Kay, did you want to mention your grant, the $41,183.60?
I got more money.
I didn't know about that money.
Well, there you have it. So, you received $41,183.60 from an annual Perkins funding grant.
Oh, yes.
It's an increase of from 28% from last year.
Yeah, so the Perkins funds, the way the legislation's written is, it, the more students that we serve with barriers, the more funding we get receive. And so typically we've received around $15,000. I think our advertising and reaching out to districts in Western Sussex that fall under those categories have expanded our Perkins fund quite a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks.
Yeah. I usually let Billy Joe handle the money. I just spend it.
So in addition to that, the Delaware Department of Education, I guess, comes in and identifies the percentage of special education students who are evaluated within the first 45 or 90 days of school calendar days, whichever is less. And they came in into our school and all of our evaluations were found to be in compliance. We also donated, as you know, our bleachers, our home bleachers to the First State Military Academy, and they were not only grateful enough to send it, thank you, but then when we posted it on our social media, they responded and thanked us on our social media too. On January 18th, it was a Saturday, we had the Skills USA internal competition event, which we had talked about. And we are hoping to see that grow next year to include additional CTE areas. On January 25th, our wrestler Dustin Elliott was recognized as a Delaware Sports Athlete of the Week. And we are currently, as it's February Black History Month, our school is engaged in Black History Month with daily notices, awareness activities, and events. This past weekend, I don't even know, it all runs together now, but February 6th through 9th, our drama department did four performances of Matilda, and that went over very well. I was out of town and didn't see it, but I did see a lot of positive posts about it on, again, social media. February 7th, we had a job fair, which took place of our CTE week that we've used to do in the past. Had over 40 businesses participate. On February 13th, Dr. Carson held a town hall meeting after school to discuss programs, remote learning, and provide building updates. And on February 14th, which was this past Friday, we had a professional development day where our teachers and administrators met with members from SREB. In addition, we have students who are participating in the Sussex County Honors Band Ensembles. Elias Garcia, Thomas Davis, John Olakowski, Naomi Ruff, and Vito Reyes, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And we have a couple reminders. Spring sports start on February 24th. We have a sports signing scheduled in the cafeteria for February 26th. On March 6th, we have our honorable breakfast in the cafeteria. And on March 13th, we will have our Sussex County Transition Fair in the Commons area from 4:30 to 6:30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your presentations. I'd like to close my report with a comment or a statement regarding, I think we're probably 3 weeks in at this point, of the information regarding immigration and the level of uncertainty and concern that was raised within schools and within our school is not an exception to that. We've communicated to staff and others, the guidance that we've received from new Secretary of Education, Cindy Martin, which gave some more detailed information, which was great to receive regarding procedures. Should in fact someone knock on the door, and the requirements that are necessary, it would involve my office heavily. If that were to be the case, we've been told that things have gotten calmer in the building. We had an attendance problem the first week. We had an attendance problem with adult education. And we're
I'd like to say that we're back to normal operating, but our message was the same, that school is, as school has been, a safe place for students to come and to become educated. And political matters are political matters, and that school is school, and we're going to continue to provide a safe environment for our students along the way. Obviously, it's a fine line, and we work along the way, but things have settled down, and our messaging has been, and our staff, I think, has done a great job also of assuring students that it's okay to come to school and to participate without going through an identification process. We've learned how to be a little different regarding our language and the word ice, especially during the winter. And is there going to be ice tomorrow? And some folks get a little rattled along the way, but we're talking about weather. Glenn Dixon and his crew and Corporal Petrella and the AG's office and others have been keeping everything updated, and guidance has been brought forth. We've continued to communicate with folks. Sometimes communication, in my opinion, can continue the ball rolling. And as long as things are calm and students are being served and done so in a safe manner, then we're going to proceed until the next snowball. So I just wanted to keep the board informed about the steps that we've taken and the assurances that we've given to our student body and to folks, whether that's day program or evening program, and to go on from that standpoint.
Thank you.
That's all I have, sir.
Thank you all for your reports. Next, we'll go to board reports. Ms. Jones.
The legislative committee of the DSBA met on February 5th. I have the reports if anybody wants to see them, but one that would be interesting to the board, people here, House Bill 28 by Danny Short. That's to amend Title 14 of the Delaware Code relating to Sussex County Vocational Technical High School. There was quite a bit of discussion. They did not like, because it says, thereby allowing the school district the same rights and privileges as Polytech and New Castle County Vo-Tech. And for some reason, they wanted clarification of that. They thought we were getting something above and beyond, and I tried to explain the history and why that the legislation was put in, and that we're the only one with it. The discussion against that, well, their vote was to remain neutral, and that was led by a gentleman from Woodbridge. I voted against it, and Milford voted against it, but it was passed that it was to remain neutral for further clarification. I'm not sure what clarification needs when it says it's the same rights and privileges as the other vote-techs. But it was a discussion, and then a gentleman came and asked me some papers.
Should we light on that? No, I can't. I have no reports. I think one of the issues involves whether or not Sussex Tech can increase their allotment of students and the funding for the students. That's the only issue that I could provide in terms of clarification.
Yeah. One of the pieces in the bill is, as you're aware, the current law has a cap of 1,450 students. We also have an approved CN, and as you heard earlier this evening, we're building a school for 1,800 students. Representative Short intends to introduce a substitute bill that will address the enrollment cap matter. We'll continue to operate under the school choice legislation along the way. I don't believe that the concerns that were expressed during the House committee hearing were directed specifically at Sussex Tech, but it was, I guess that would be a safe statement, in counties that were north of us and how they operate. But the critical matter is that we get the 1450 removed, and we've been assured that that will happen.
What will it be next year, our enrollment?
Our enrollment is going to be close to 14, between 14 and 1425. We've intentionally kept at the 1375 number in order, number one, to balance class sizes, And then as we start stepping into the new building, September of 27, that will begin to enroll 425 freshmen and start working our way up to the 450 number to get to the 18 as we proceed through. So,
thank you. Next, we'll move to public participation. Have anyone? Hearing none, we're going to go to agenda action items. I need a motion for the approval of the personnel agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson. I think he beats you too. And then we'll go with Mr. Hayes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the monthly financials for January 2025.
So moved, Marcel Hayes.
Second.
Motion moved by Mr. Hayes, seconded by Ms. Wise. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the district purchase orders, change orders, and vouchers.
So moved.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the school choice lottery results for 25-26.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the Raven Academy recommendation.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Jones, seconded by Mr. Canoodle. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Next, I need approval for student field trips. Coast Guard, JROTC, to Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and the baseball team to Myrtle Beach.
So moved. Second, Marcel Hayes.
Motion made by Mr. Canoodle, seconded by Mr. Hayes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the repair and maintenance plan for 24-28.
So moved.
Second,
motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Mr. Hayes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Is there any unfinished business or new business? Okay, our next board meeting is Wednesday, March 12th, 2025. I need a motion for adjournment.
So moved. Mm-hmm.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Canoodle, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion, meeting adjourned.
Hey guys.